Vou nesta primeira intervenção falar em português e queria começar por lhes dar as boas-vindas ao Parlamento Português e à Comissão de Assuntos Europeus e a fazer as apresentações das pessoas que aqui estão, dos membros da Comissão. Penso que já conhecem o Sr. Vice-Presidente da Comissão, o deputado João Serpa Oliva, deputado do CDS, que é um partido que faz parte da coligação de governo. Sra. Deputada Maria Helena André, coordenadora do Partido Socialista na Comissão de Assuntos Europeus, portanto, neste momento, partido da oposição. Eu presido a Comissão, sou deputado eleito pelo PSD, Paulo Mota Pinto. O Sr. Deputado António Rodrigues, que é vice-presidente do grupo parlamentar do PSD, que é o principal partido do governo, o maior partido do governo. O Sr. Deputado Vitalino Canas, que é deputado do Partido Socialista e foi já coordenador desta Comissão e foi também antes presidente, na anterior legislatura, desta mesma Comissão. Queria dar-lhes as boas-vindas, repito, esperar que tenhamos um bom diálogo, uma boa discussão. Penso que, como já lhes disse, temos ambos muito a ganhar no entendimento, no diálogo mútuo. Sabemos que a Finlândia e Portugal, apesar de estarem em pontas diferentes da Europa, deram exemplo nas últimas eleições legislativas na Finlândia da interdependência política que há na Europa, porque coincidiram com realmente o pedido de assistência financeira portuguesa. Estamos, e sei que isso foi discutido nas eleições finlandesas, estamos evidentemente aqui disponíveis para os temas e para as questões que queiram colocar-nos. Eu passava a palavra à Sra. Presidente inicialmente e depois passaria a palavra aqui aos meus colegas para fazerem uma intervenção inicial, se quiserem, mas antes de mais, Sra. Presidente Mia Petra Kumpula-Natri, por favor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very happy to see so many colleagues of ours today when we have one full day visit to Lisbon. We started on Sunday night from Helsinki and spent one day in Den Haag in Netherlands and then one day here in Portugal, and we tried to make good use of the time as there's so much happening at home in our own parliament as well. But I thank you, the chair, that you took seriously my intention that also to create bilateral contacts in between our committees. We as chairs have the COSAC meetings, and then also a bigger number of delegates can attend the COSAC meetings, but still I think it's important every country also have bilateral contacts and deeper knowledge of the other situation and ideas also for the future, as we both have seats in the Council and then even European Parliament, which is a different body, but then building a common European Union, not only the bilateral questions then. And thank you for the lunch. During the lunch, it was many times referred that we are the tips of the Europe, of the Union. We are from far north, you are down south, but we are more, my home city is also by the coastal line of the Baltic Sea, and the Helsinki capital is the Baltic Sea, and even it is the closed sea, we think very much of being also independent of the seas, and that why also the Portuguese people seems to be quite similar to the Finnish people, and at least we feel much at home here. Thank you for that as well. Our purpose for the trip, besides of just getting a general view how you work, how you do your EU affairs, is to learn about the situation in Portugal at the moment, whereas you have been taking serious measures, you are still under the way to do measures, but then at the same time we also have a common European agenda. There are proposals by the Van Rompuy, proposals by Barroso, Olli Rehn has been active, both our commissioners are in the key positions, not always maybe talking in favor of the former countries as they are working for the Commission now, but still there are also politicians in our delegation from the both opposition for the government parties. We are representing also different party opinions in our delegation. But then also I could maybe describe how we work, what my parliament or the committee is doing, because we are quite special also in the Europe. If I start with the technical description for a few minutes, and then we can go for the more political agenda to say. So my committee, Grand Committee, is the EU Affairs Committee since 1995. It has been before almost like the second chamber, that if the it's always unicameral, but just that if something was changed or is still changed in the parliamentary plenary, it has to be sent to a committee to be checked there for the second time before the final vote. So that's the traditional role. But when we joined the European Union, it is the decision in the constitution that the power lies in our committee to approve what government is doing in the council meetings. So we meet every week with the ministers before they go to the council meeting to negotiate with the other European states. So we say that this is a strong democracy and a strong commitment of the national parliament also to prepare the view of the Finland. And even when I talk with the Barroso's cabinet about dialogue between the national states, I don't understand the idea of creating a different view on the national parliament and different view of the national government, because the government should be supported by the majority in the parliament. So we have done our system to be based on that fact, that each opinion by the government is supported by the parliament, as in democracy should be. And then it means that in the normal procedure of the European Affairs Agenda, we don't work with the directives directly, but we work for the government opinions. So they need to inform us immediately with their opinion that this directive seems to be okay, or this green paper by the Commission seems to be okay, or this is the Finnish perspective we have to negotiate, and that and that. And then our committee is the final say of the Parliament. But when it's up to the common agricultural policy, so of course the Committee on Agriculture works on the paper by government, receives all the professors, farmers organization, environmental organization, all these questions are handled in the special committee, and then the final say of the parliament is done in the Grand Committee. So this is for the European Union affairs in general. And then before the council meets, so then the Minister of Agriculture comes to our committee, and then we debate, and then might have even last minute vote. It happened on the fishery. There were division of the ideas inside of Finland, how much salmon can be fished by the alongside the coastal line, and how much should be in the rivers of the north, and is it on the level that it is standing for the decades to come, or are we overfishing the question? So that was voted actually in the committee, and then the committee changed the opinion of the government. So then the Minister of Agriculture had to present the opinion of the parliament. So then we can exercise the powers. But of course, our government of six parties, only two parties in the opposition, but a governmental party of six. So of course, there is a political debate all the time with the members of the parliament, how far they can go, what they can do, the unofficial. But this is still the parliamentarism that we are doing. Our committee is different, that also we work behind the closed doors, as all the committees. So then we are also, even the questions of the euro crisis, even knowing that some of the leakages might harm the markets, to say, we have meetings that government is telling out quite openly what they want to, what is the realistic wishes, what are the opinions of the other countries, which is the analysis of the negotiating strategies, and all that, and then there is a lot of confidential information. But the Finnish tradition is that there is a big trust and a big appreciation of the democracy. So that we say that the things are fighting, not the people. So I must say that in my committee, there are also the both opposition leaders. They sit there, they hear the confidential information from the government, and there's no leakages. So we can argue, and we will have fights in the plenary, and we will go to the television and talk. But then I also sat in the opposition parliamentarian last term, so I said, you can refer the figures in Guardian or Financial Times or whatsoever. So you can talk quite much, even knowing some confidential information. So we are that way very much involved in the process. So the good side is that when it's time to ratify, we are very mature to ratify the directives and to approve the decisions as we are. We know what has been prepared, and then the government can then trust that there is not afterwards complaints to the Luxembourg Court of Justice or to the court, or then just to take a long time before the ratification takes in time in the Finnish. So these are maybe the features we are looking at, and then think that we should maybe try to open more debates for the public, because people should be aware also what are the European Union decisions and what are the future plans, and we do those debates in the plenary. But then I don't want to give up the possibility to have the confidential information and involve the parliamentarians also in the process of the European politics, because they are coming very close to the budgetary subsidiarity and questions like that. So we can say that we are in the process, not only the afterwards pushing the button, but yes. So that is how we work. Would you tell a little bit of your way, and then we can maybe take this?
Mrs. Chairman, I will now switch to English after my first intervention, because I think it's more efficient. Obviously, any of my colleagues has the choice to speak in Portuguese or in English. I will afterwards pass the floor to my colleagues for political questions, but I'd just like to start with a short description of the way we work. The Committee on European Affairs is the committee which is specialized on affairs concerning European integration. It accompanies the Portuguese, the participation of Portugal in the European institutions. I must say that much of the European questions have, as you know, a deep impact in the internal policy, so that they are now often discussed in the plenary. Normally before the council meetings with the Prime Minister, or in debates every fortnight, from each 2 weeks. We in the committee normally make the debriefing after the council with the Secretary of State. We have, for instance, today, he will come later this afternoon to talk to us on what has happened in the last European Council. We accompany the legislative and other initiatives of the European institutions, like the Commission, like the European Central Bank. We make reports on those, namely on the subsidiarity question. Concerning this, in some cases, we make hearings on this, and there are discussions on these matters. Normally, our meetings are open. I can only remember one case with the president of the Central Bank where we had a closed door meeting because the questions are more sensitive. The attendance of journalists depends on the interests of the subject matter. We had, for instance, if we have a Secretary of State in a hearing on financial transaction taxes, we will have journalists. In other cases, more technical, normally don't have. We also follow the yearly report on the participation of Portugal in the European Union. We are now also following the situation concerning transposition into national law of directives. Namely of directives concerning the internal market, because we are worried of delays in transpositions of our position in this internal market scoreboard, I think you know. That's our main activity, so we don't have this transversal competency like the Grand Committee. We are specialized in European affairs. Obviously, in what concerns namely participation in conferences, other initiatives, that have specific subjects, sometimes the question arises whether the European Affairs Committee shall take part in all, or these are only initiatives for specialized committees. Because as the European integration proceeds, well, the European Affairs Committee would tend to be present in almost all initiatives concerning finance, foreign and security, foreign and security policy, and other. We are now we have taken part in the conference on the common policy, common security and foreign policy. We will probably also take part in this conference on the foreseen in Article 13 of the Fiscal Compact with the Budget and Finance Committee. But we don't take part in all, obviously in the COSACs, in, as you know, but not in all conferences that take part in, that take place in Brussels. So there's an adjustment of the intervention. It's a division of competencies between the commissions that sometimes has to take place case by case. That's what I would tell you for now. And if you allow me, I would now pass the floor to my colleagues so that they can also speak more about political questions. We have the talk that we would perhaps speak about our present situation, the situation of our program assistance program. It has also to do with the European institutions and also of our positions towards European construction. I leave open to my colleagues to address these subjects. Mr. António Rodrigues is the Vice President of the Parliamentary Group for the main government party. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. President, Mrs. President. In the name of my party and myself and to all the delegation, it's a pleasure to receive you here. It's always an honor to receive colleagues from other parliaments to discuss with us the matters that are important, for both of our countries, of course. It's also important two main things that I would like to address you about. Well, the first is, how do you see Europe, your integration in Europe, like our integration in Europe? Because if we are members of the European Affairs Committee, it is important to see how we deal with these matters, in spite of what Mrs. President said in the way you work and that our president already explained how we work around these issues and the way that we address them. But it's important that we are aware of how each of us can see how we can deal with European matters, because we are engaged to Europe, we are engaged in the future of Europe, and we want to be always trying to get in a better and a deeper integration. The second remark that it would be important to discuss this afternoon is, and this is a question I would address to you, is how do you see Portugal, besides what is formal and known, that is that we are in a program for financial assistance, an international program, but how do you see Portugal inside of this program? Even yesterday, President and myself had the opportunity of discussing these matters with the president of the Eurogroup, and he said one sentence that I've kept for myself as probably the best sentence that could define what is Portugal. And I would like, and I wouldn't matter that it would be the best sentence to see Portugal. That is, Portugal is not a case of success, but is a country of commitment. That is, internationally, for us, it's important than to be known more to be a success that could be a momentaneous success or possibility, but more than that, that the international community, and mainly in Europe, would understand that we have committed to a certain number of compromises and that we are not only attached to them, but we are wanting to deliver all of them until the end, so that we can be again seen by Europe as a country with credibility, reliable, and that you can trust on us as we trust on the rest of Europe to solve our problems that are the same. At the end, the problems are the same. We want to build an integrated space. We want to be a part of a bigger union where we have common interests, where we have different cultures, of course, different languages, for sure, but we have the same aims, the same objectives. We want to build a place where we can all live in peace, with prosperity, and with a future for all of us. So this is important for us also, not only to have an exchange about the ways we work, and we already seen that you work slightly different than we do, as you have the possibility of having your prime minister in your committee, you can have a discussion with him, you have or can deliver a mandate, but it can be changed in certain circumstances, but you are always entitled to know what is going on. As Mrs. President said, not to go to Luxembourg to Court of Justice. You have an easy way to approve all the regulations or the project that are in discussion. We are a different way, but we are developing. Even already in this, for the past 2 years, we developed a lot. For the responsibility of the main parties, what is important here, it is, even though if there is, at this point, two parties in the government and there are three or four parties in the opposition, we have a very common way to see Europe among at least the three main parties, the two parties that are in the government and the main party of the opposition. That meant, for instance, that we had a very big consensus changing the way that we approached and see the development of the Portuguese policy as it has to do with European affairs, and we change it in matter that, for now, the Prime Minister is obliged to come to the plenary sessions before each of the European Council to explain what will be the Portuguese position at that meeting. We don't give him a mandate, but we can approve a recommendation before the European Council. So the government is free to change their position, and we do this because we understand that when we are negotiating political positions among other 26 states in the near future, 27, it's many times difficult if you don't have some kind of flexibility to negotiate positions, mainly when you are talking about main European policies, and we know that the crisis that we are living in means that sometimes you have to change your position. You can't be straight, you can't be closed, you have to have some kind of flexibility. So it is important for us to understand, first of all, how do you see Portugal? Second, if you see, as we do and the other authorities in Europe, that we are committed to this program, and if you believe that we are able to achieve all of the objectives that were there, it is a political, of course, a political view, not a technical one. We're not discussing here financial matters. We're not discussing here if we are going to achieve the figures or the numbers. The important thing is to understand our commitment, even though, and it's important to say this because I already said and have said this many times before, even though this means a big sacrifice for the Portuguese people. As you know, the Portuguese unemployment rates are very high, and this is obviously a consequence of the program. We know it was expected, probably not so much, because at the same time that we have a crisis and difficulty in Portugal, there is a European crisis also. So it doesn't help us delivering all the consequences, all the positive aspects that we are doing. But as I was saying, the important thing here is to see how you see Portugal, and the important thing is that we can establish ways of cooperation here and in the future. We will be, of course, also engaged in COSAC at the end of the next month, so we can discuss also things over there. And at the other conferences, like the President said, that we are engaged also. And it's important always to establish this future cooperation because, as I told you at the beginning, we are in Europe. We are truly in Europe with our heart and our mind, and we want to be in Europe in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you allow me, I would now pass to a member of parliament for the opposition, Mrs. Helena André, which is a coordinator for the Socialist Party. It's the biggest opposition party. It was the party in government until 2011, until those elections that happened after the application for the for the financial assistance after your own elections.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Colleagues, I would also like to welcome you to the Parliament and say that it is a pleasure to have a delegation from Finland, especially after having followed very closely the hot debate you had in your country on the occasion of the last elections regarding the assistance program to Portugal. And all of a sudden, we just jumped into your window and we were part of the debate in your country regarding what should be the position of Finland and of the Finnish people and of the Finnish Parliament regarding the issue of international support to other countries in the EU sharing the same currency and facing difficulties. I don't think there is any need to go back to history as to how we got there, why we got there, because I think we all know what has happened. In my view, what is important at this stage is to see how do we plan the future? How do we move from where we are? And I imagine you have a lot of information regarding the situation in Portugal. I was reading a Bruegel, a think tank of Brussels, report which was issued last week regarding a comparison between the different countries that were under a program, and it was quite interesting because they said Ireland is a success story. We can already say that. Greece is a disaster, and Portugal, we don't know. And I think that this really describes what is the situation in our country, because if we look at the fact that we are a country of compromises, so far we have ticked positively most of the things in the box regarding the program, although the program has been changed in the different reviews of the memorandum, the results in terms of people's perceptions and in terms of the functioning of the economy have been negative and not positive. You know our levels of unemployment. We have an economic stagnation, we have been having enormous difficulties in taming the budget, the deficit, and our public debt has been increasing and not decreasing. So if you look at the figures in a very crude way, you would think that the program is not working, because instead of being able to counter the starting point, we are having enormous difficulties in relation to that. And we were discussing this over lunch and reminding ourselves of Finland, when you had been through a difficult period as well in the 80s and in the 90s. And probably the difference between then and now was that at that time Europe was growing. And today we have a recession in most of the European countries. The Eurozone is in recession. So the capacity for the Portuguese economy to be competitive, but to be able to rely on the economies of the other European countries, is much lower than it was before. And we should never forget that over 75% or more of our exports go to the EU countries. When you have a recession or a stagnation in most of the EU countries, our capacity to export will be reduced. And so our capacity to improve our economic situation will also be lower. But I mean, that's roughly the scenario. I think what is important is to see where we go from here. And I think it would be important also to have your views on that. Are we equipped with the right instruments today in terms of the economic and monetary union, and with the efforts that are being done in terms to improve economic policy coordination? Do we need to move further into this political union everyone seems to be talking about, but no one seems to be doing anything about? Are we supposed to consider that we can build a stronger economic and monetary union without thinking that the social union will have to accompany and not be the poor relative of this economic and monetary union? How are we going to react to the fact that Europe has had enormous difficulties in adjusting its competitive capacity and its productive capacity to the globalization process, and we will be entering very soon this transatlantic agreement with the US, which is a landmark regarding the capacity of Europe to export and to do business with the US and to become the most important trade area in the world. And how do you think that affects the capacity of the European Union to move forward together and not to move forward as each country by itself? Because I think that one of the main risks we have in Europe today is to see nationalism coming back and the idea that we can do better as a country by itself instead of working together in a collective way. And I'm not sure that today most of the citizens in Europe think that the right approach is to move forward together. There is a problem of confidence, and I think that as politicians we have the responsibility of trying to rebuild this confidence. But if as politicians we don't have a clear view and a clear message as to where we are heading together, as to whether we have the right instruments in place to move forward with a single currency and to move forward with the economic and monetary union with the aspects that have not yet been achieved, I think it will be very difficult to renew this trust and this confidence of the citizens in Europe. So I think these are important issues, and I'm not convinced that the European Council has been addressing those issues in a serious way, or I would say sometimes even in a responsible way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would just like to cover all parties, all political parties presented, so I would first then pass the floor to Mr. João Serpa Oliva, a Member of Parliament for CDS, a smaller party in the coalition of the government. Thank you. Tem a palavra.
Sr. Presidente, Sra. Presidente da Grande Comissão, espero que não levem a mal, Sras. E Srs. Deputados, que eu falo em português, Sr. Embaixador, mas acho que em Portugal, no Parlamento Português, falarei sempre em português. Qualquer comissão que aqui tenha recebido, seja quem for, continuo a insistir que uma língua que é falada por 300 milhões de pessoas em todo o mundo deve ser a nossa língua aqui dentro desta casa. Peço desculpa não fazer em inglês, mas falso, enfim, dentro da língua, da minha língua mãe. E, portanto, começaria por agradecer, em nome do Partido CDS. O CDS é um partido de ideologia democrata cristã e, portanto, é um partido conservador, e portanto, agradecer-vos o destino da vossa viagem ter sido exatamente Portugal, nesta curta viagem que fazem. E queria pedir-vos que, em primeiro lugar, levassem para o vosso país, depois desta curtíssima viagem, a sensação de que Portugal está a cumprir o projeto idealizado pela Troika. Não o estamos a fazer por imposição da Troika. Estamos a fazê-lo porque é convicção nossa e, obviamente, do CDS e do partido que compõe o governo, neste caso, o Partido Social Democrata, que falou antes de mim, que estamos a cumprir com a certeza de que, com as dificuldades inerentes ao seu cumprimento, iremos ultrapassar a situação em que nos encontrávamos e iremos seguramente sair desta situação. Foi um programa extremamente exigente, é um programa extremamente exigente, que tem feito com que a maioria dos portugueses, a grande maioria dos portugueses, passe por sacrifícios, alguns quase inacreditáveis. No entanto, sabemos também que já ultrapassámos outras crises piores e que estamos certos e convictos que conseguiremos ultrapassar esta. A retração da despesa pública, e nomeadamente o aumento de impostos, criou, como calculam, uma chaga terrível, que é a questão do desemprego. Perguntava a um de vós há pouco qual é a vossa taxa de desemprego, disseram-me que era de 8%. Nós temos 17,5% de taxa de desemprego. E essa é seguramente para nós a nossa maior preocupação. Temos efetivamente que estar do lado deles. E, obviamente, que isto também se passou porque a questão da receita pública e do consumo interno sofreu, efetivamente, uma terrível decalagem e baixou substancialmente. Mas também compreendemos que os vossos eleitores, os vossos contribuintes, vos perguntem, quando voltarem agora para a Finlândia, o que estão a fazer com o dinheiro deles, no sentido de saber o porquê de estarem a contribuir para que Portugal saia da crise em que mergulhámos. Obviamente que vos queríamos dizer que gostávamos muito que fizessem acompanhar essa mensagem de regresso, não seja uma mensagem meramente política, seja uma mensagem convicta, uma mensagem de coração, de que Portugal está efetivamente no caminho e tentando encontrar verdadeiramente uma nova posição no todo europeu, cumprindo as questões que nos foram levantadas, nomeadamente ao longo desta crise que assola não só Portugal, mas como a Europa toda. E, portanto, gostaria, para terminar, de saudar a Finlândia, um país que mantém realmente um exemplo para todos os países europeus. Foi dos poucos países da União Europeia que conseguiu evitar uma recessão. A Finlândia é o único país da zona euro, salvo erro ou omissão, que mantém os 3 A's nas agências de rating, portanto, com a notação máxima. Permaneceu relativamente resistente aos problemas levantados pela zona euro e é uma das economias mais dinâmicas de toda a Europa. E, portanto, a questão que vos punha, se fosse possível que me respondessem, é que quais os programas de incentivo às pequenas e médias empresas que vos levaram a que realmente não haja nessa área, porque é a área de grande emprego, quer em Portugal, provavelmente também na Finlândia, são as pequenas e médias empresas, o que é que levou a que não houve aí uma falência em massa, como houve em Portugal, a partir desta crise? Portanto, a questão seria essa a primeira. A segunda seria relativamente à fiscalidade. Nós sabemos que existe em Portugal uma tremenda dificuldade, sob o ponto de vista fiscal, no sentido de conseguirmos, dentro de uma grande parte da população portuguesa, que os contribuintes paguem os respectivos impostos. Como é que na Finlândia conseguem fazer com que, provavelmente, a grande maioria pague esses mesmos impostos? Nós temos a noção que em Portugal temos uma economia paralela que atingirá neste momento os 25%, um quarto do PIB, o que é muito importante e do qual não conseguimos, efetivamente, sob o ponto de vista fiscal, que eles contribuam com o que quer que seja para o todo nacional. Muito obrigado mais uma vez em nome do CDS e bem-ajam por terem vindo. Serão sempre bem-vindos e Portugal acolhá-vos já sempre com todo o gosto e com todo o carinho. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado. Thank you very much. I now pass the floor to Mr. Pedro Filipe Soares. He's a member of the Parliament from the Bloco de Esquerda, the left bloc, as the name says, it's a left party, which I can say, perhaps you will say it, but it was a critic for the program, assistance program, since the beginning.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to welcome you all to Portugal. I believe it's important to get in touch with the reality of each country and the plurality of the opinions in each country. So it's, good for us, for you to be here with different parties, different opinions, and I believe it's also good for you, for us in this part, in this side of the table, there are several opinions about what is going in Portugal and what is going in Europe. And I'd like to say about Europe prior to Portugal, that the main problem in Europe, it is austerity. We can see now that austerity is making Europe to enter in recession. So if it was any kind of solution, we now see that it is really a problem. In fact, Europe is a weak link it's becoming a weak link in the global scenario. And I believe that is the main problem that all Europeans, all political Europeans, thought in the first decade of the new century, in how to make Europe more important in the world, and how to answer the growing of the BRICS, mainly in China, the growing of China. And I'm unhappy to say it, but I believe that the consequences that we drove by that debate and the conclusions of that thoughts are not the ones that we needed. The opposite thing. We had in this first decade a major financial crisis, and the European answer is the one that has more problems in all the worldwide answers. And the stage of the answer right now is the broader programs of austerity, large programs in the southern Europe, but the same policies in the center of Europe. And results are here to be seen. There are two things that unite Europe today. One is austerity, the second one is unemployment. And I believe that the second one is a consequence of the first one. So we need in Europe to have an agenda to the growth, because that's were part of the solution to the Portuguese problem. If Europe is growing, Portugal it will also be growing. If Europe is entering recession and austerity is gaining terrain, Portugal will be even more further away from the European standards. So in this first part of my intervention, I believe that the conclusion that I wanted to say is, yes, this is a problem of all Europeans. No, this is not a problem of the lazy ones in the southern Europe. No, this is not a problem of the lazy ones in Portugal. This is a political problem. This is a wrong perspective of the economy, and it is a wrong answer of all Europe as a whole to make a stand for its position in the international worldwide scenario. I believe that we are having this path by two factors, two main factors. One, it is what I've said before. It's the answer of Europe to the pressure, mainly the pressure of Asia and Southern America, but mainly the pressure of Asia. Second, it is the response of Europe to the one thing that also unites us, that is our welfare state. If you look at austerity programs in Southern Europe, even in France, that's not under a program, or Spain with an austerity plan but without Troika, you see that what's being attacked is the social welfare. And that is, I believe, the one of the main goals of austerity, to destroy social welfare, to destroy the healthcare, to destroy the education system, to destroy the pensions programs that we have in each country. And I believe that if we go in this path, we are losing what Europe has of its best, and what it gives as as a society and as an example of society to the world. I will now enter the Portuguese reality. Yes, we had some problems before, but as you can see, if you look at our public data prior to the financial crisis, our debt was not as it is today, was below 80% of the GDP. Our growth was not in the average of the European Union, but it was getting closer to the European Union. Our standards in 40 years of democracy, about 40 years of democracy, then it was about 35 years of democracy, gave us a capability of achieve what in other countries of Europe they needed more than a half a century to achieve. The advances in education, in healthcare, in social insurance, in the pensions, it's we did in 35 years what other countries of Europe, mainly Northern Europe, did more than took more than 50 years to do. So I believe that we are farther away from that vision of the lazy ones in Europe. And I hope that this debate, with all the opinions, different ones, even here in Portugal, would help to destroy that idea once for all. But we are now destroying what were our achievements. We now have youth unemployment about 40%. The immigration in the youth is among us. We are losing the ones that are best suited to improve our economy, because the younger ones are also the ones with more knowledge, with the degrees, with the investment that the country made in them to improve our future. So this crisis is not only taking away what we have, what we have built, but is also destroying our capability of having a future that is near the European standards. And I think that is a problem of the austerity plans. And I think that we would appreciate a lot if you help us change the view that Europe has about austerity. We have in Portugal different opinions about the Troika program, the memorandum. I'll give you the one that it's mine, that's my from my party, that, as the president said at the beginning, it's a critical one. But I'll give it with facts for you to understand that it's not only an opinion out of the reality, but an opinion with the reality. In the beginning of the Troika program, our debt was about a little above 100% of the GDP. It was expected to be about 114% in 2014. It is now in 127% of the GDP. The debt is worse, much worse than it was expected. The unemployment was expected to get its higher point at about 14, less than 15%. It is now above 18%, and it is expected, says the government, I believe it would be higher, but the government data says that it at the end of this year it will achieve 18.5% of the people with capability to work. Our deficit, despite all the cuts in the public expenditure, has yet to be dominated by the government. The government cutted a lot more than it was expected in public expenditure, but as it would been easy to foresee, only the Troika and the government didn't foresee it, the cutting in the public expenditure as the result to give the economy a much worse state. So we cut in the expenditure, but we have less receipts in the part, the fiscal part. So after all these cuts, we are in a difficult position to give a usual and a good health to our public accounts. As you can see, all these data that I gave in to you can be not, they are real, I'm not making them up. So if you analyze and evaluate the program by its results, we can say that the economy is worse, the public system is worse, the public, the budget, it's not yet, it is not yet a solution, and the future that people expect for themselves, it's a lot worse than they would ever expect. the result of all this should take us to the only conclusion that is, I believe, reasonable. Thank you. That is, the program don't work, and the government is making it even worser than it was at the beginning, saying that it will cut more than the program said at the beginning. So we need from Europe, from our countries, our friends in Europe, we need two things: solidarity and growth. If we have solidarity, we can pay all our debt in a way that it doesn't kill us. Because if we are dead, we would not be able to pay our debt. That's a main point. We need that solidarity from Europe to help us also have in Europe a relaunch to our economy. If Spain grows, if France grows, if Germany grows, all of these three countries are the main markets for our exportation. So in here, we have part of our solution to our country. So we need in Europe the understanding that this is not only our fault. We weren't perfect before of the financial crisis, but we gave the crisis the same response that all other countries in the euro, and that was the main reason why our debt has increased so high. We have demonstrated that we want to be fully partner of European Union and the Eurozone. We don't want to get out of any of these two areas, but we need from Europe the solidarity to help us do that, not the condemnation to austerity to take inevitable to us the leaving of the Eurozone and the leaving of the European Union. I will conclude saying that I believe that the main problem, it's a political choice in Portugal, but mainly in Europe. And in my last sentence, it's the same almost as the beginning. Austerity is killing Europe. If we don't kill austerity, we will destroy all that we have been achieved in the last 30 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I forgot to say that Mr. Pedro Filipe Soares is also the parliamentary leader for his party left bloc. There is also another left party, the Portuguese Communist Party, which is in the committee, but it's not in this meeting. And I just like to say that, as was apparent, there are divergences, differences, as it's natural in the parliamentary body concerning the interpretation, the causes and the effects of the program in the present situation. I would now pass the floor to you, Mrs. Chairman. And
thank you. Thank you for the very interesting introduction and a different variety of the political ideas too. For the last one, I want to comment, there is not a feeling or not a common debate in Finland about the lazy Portuguese. But that is something greetings to come. On the contrary, the feeling is that Portuguese are taking the crisis seriously and working on how to resolve the thing. And for us, it is very tough and difficult political decisions always when building up a solidarity mechanism and to have the picture why. It's not only the distributing money in the Finnish parliament. Do you have a figure how much we have done cuts during 2 years of GDP? 3%. 3% GDP cuts in Finland because we see that our export markets are suffering. There is no money from heaven, even for the 3A country. Our debt level is increasing. We are at the moment on 53 point something. But then we are very Christian on the way that, and this is not a religional one, but the discrimination, the describing the feelings in Finland. When we have an agreement, you can always trust a Finn. And that's a national prideness, that when we have rules, we stick to them. when we have a constitution for Europe and it says 3%, it said 60%, we took it very seriously and thought that we have to work on those questions. So when your crisis started, it was 100 and it was even 80%. So it was actually not fitting in the rules. And the Finnish people say, what kind of rules are these European rules? And in Finland, the country is built up on the very much on the legal system. And it is very much the legality also in the parliament we work with, and on the constitution, and we appreciate and know also your parliament and government has to apply the constitutional decisions by the court, and so there, as we also understand that when there is a law, when there is a constitutional decision, it limits the politics, what we can do. So this is maybe the main concern in Finland. Once we have rules, we should take them seriously, each of us, and we think it's solidarity also not to do something against the rules. But then we saw the situation that our common currency is in the crisis, started with the Greece, then later became to also to the Portugal, and as Mr. Andreas said here, it was during our elections, and then also there was an old government started the negotiation, then very hot political debates, then the new government started to negotiate, and it was six parties from the left-wing alliance, Social Democrats, Finnish Socialist Party, then EPP Party, the Greens, Swedish-speaking minority, and the Christian Democrats. Those six parties together founded a common basis for the next 4 years, including the euro crisis. How should we act? What should we do? And the reason why these parties, all these parties, found a common basis was that someone has to govern the country, someone has to govern the European Union. So there was very much pragmatic point of view then what to do. So also to secure our own future means that we will done the cuttings, we will increase the taxes, and then we will find a solution for the euro. And we committed also on the euro. And it takes also sacrifices, to say not very popular on the streets in Finland either, but the government is committed to find the solutions. And then do we have the right tools? Yes, we have some tools. We have MFF for cohesion, so for the solidarity. We're net payers. Our share grew up. Of course, some blame the government that they are paying too much, but yes, we will pay. And there is a cohesion fund for the solidarity to start with. And then there are tools for the countries in help of the need, the cash flow. And it was quite clear in Finland that Portuguese was out of the market. You couldn't get more money from the market. And that was the reason we said to our people, to our citizens, to parliament, from the government, that they need some money, loan, which they could not find from the markets. Wasn't that true? So some money was needed, and that's why the money was then given, and then ESM is done for that. So then we think it's also solidarity to build up a tool, a ESM, to be used then when needed. And then there's a lot of talk about a banking crisis in Finland, not because our banks, because we only have too few Nordic, very small ones, far from the Central European or the global markets, playing their nice role in the north. So we are not involved in the banking business on such, and that makes many think feel that it's unfair that we have to take the risk of the big global banks playing around. But then knowing that's the blood in the economy, that banks exist. So then for the banking, we think it's the order is very important. And first, it's the bank themselves who took the risky business to find out the solutions. And then it is the national responsibility, as the supervision is on the national level too. And then we very much support in the parliament, I think, across the parties, the so-called Liikanen report inside the ECB, our governor of Finnish bank, who was suggesting that we should more divide the risky business and ordinary banking business so that the banks know that, okay, this is the risky business, you have to cover the risk later, and they can price the risk. You can do sometimes good money, but when the risk is higher, you can lose, and not that the taxpayers will come in the picture. So then the banking union in that sense is our common goal. But then the legacy, that is very difficult to understand, that we should go with our tax money to pay something we have not been involved in creating, the problem, the evaluated risk, or we cannot actually even solve. We only can pay, and this is not acceptable for our point of view. So the legacy is something else than a common rules, common start, own resources. Our government is quite open for the own resources. When we have own resources, we can deal on that basis. But then transferring from one country to another, there's not actually really much basis for that kind of thinking, but a common funds, a common tax basis, a common own resources even in the future. So this is more or less the thing. So, but many for your questions, I think, yes, we are following with a great interest how Portugal is doing, and then our committee is having the reports for the next tranche and next tranche. Then can we take part and doing that? And then it was almost unanimous decision. The True Finns Party, who is also against the whole picture of how to solve the crisis and Finnish involvement, that they voted against the True Finns. But otherwise, we accepted the postponement of the more time to find out the solution. Also, the more time to not to kill, but to include the growth. My committee added also for the European perspective the remind, maybe the Commission, but each of every country, that there is an agreement. Every country signed a social charter with some rights. So then but that's the political decision then again in every country, that are they paying attention to the figure number of poor people to be reduced, a number of students from the education, that they will not drop out too early. And then we are also learning, we learned that in Holland they will include that program to their semester report to the parliament. And I think I should ask something similar from the Finnish government, that these Europe 2020 targets could be also remembered when doing the semester, that they are also targets. So the targets are not only the financial ones, but there are other targets too. But then there is room. I maybe conclude and give my colleagues also the floor to speak, but in the European framework, there are a lot of room for the politics on the European level and on the national level. And then there we think that there is room for each country to have an opposition, as it should be, and have the governing parties and how to do, but then still the rules and the solidarity and the fairness towards the other countries leaves it that we have much to do at home in each country with our national budget and our national ways to do. So our figures, our unemployment is almost 8.5%. Correct me, Ethan. And unfortunately, the figures of youth unemployment grew up very rapidly, much more quickly than we thought just half a year ago or a year ago. We made the youth guarantee that each young person under 25 will have a traineeship or working place or educational posts. And each one under 30 who has a diploma, fresh diploma, studied for years to come, and so they should have something. But it's just started, and there will be more and more actions on the municipalities. But then, and when it was agreed, this 6 billion from the European money to the regions where the unemployment of the youth is more than 25%, we were happily to do that, and still considering that we won't get any of that. But unfortunately, the very last figures of youth unemployment in Finland was more than 20 already. So I don't know if we are going to be there begging that can we get our share of the money or what will happen. But then we are doing the youth guarantee seriously. But it's very difficult when the open markets are not taking the used for the jobs and offering the jobs as easily. So this is a start. I give now turn to our vice president, who is Paula Lehtomäki, and from the opposition at the moment, the Centre Party, ELDR, in the European Parliament.
Thank you, Chair. As you mentioned, I'm representing the opposition party, but I was a cabinet minister in spring 2011 and remember very well when the application of Portugal came just 2 weeks before the election, what kind of a political tension it arised in Finland. But as was mentioned here before, it is a broad perception in Finland, not 100%, but a broad perception that Portugal is a country of commitment. And a concrete example of this is that when the decision on extension, the maturities of loans, was taken in the parliament, even part of the opposition was supporting the decision. So in addition to the government, also part of opposition was supporting it. But this perception is, of course, a very sensitive thing, and you know very well and that trust and confidence are issues that are very easy to lose. So I hope that we all can keep up with the good track and that flexibility, reasonable flexibility, is founded when it is absolutely necessary, but that the basic line and a path is very clear. I very much agree that the social dimension of this crisis is something that we have to take seriously. Youth unemployment is something very special case also in Finland, as Madam President mentioned, and it is something which can have very long-term effect in Europe, so this is something we have to battle very, very hard. But in general, we all also have to look beyond this crisis because, as you were mentioning, the pressure that we are facing now from Asia and other BRIC countries, we have to take into consideration the global view and really the fastly emerging markets and economies around the world are challenging the whole way of living, whole lifestyle in Europe and where we are. So competitiveness and re-establishing competitiveness in one way or another is the only sustainable way for growth in the longer run. As for taxation, as you posed a very concrete question that how come Finns are willing, maybe not always willing, but how they are prepared to pay taxes. Well, Finland is a country of very high taxation and has been for years and decades. And it is actually part of the Nordic welfare system picture. High taxation is the way that we have been able to establish and develop our welfare state. And one key issue is, of course, that the people can see and trust that where do their tax money go. So you have to have an efficient and accountable administration who is channeling the taxpayers' money to the targets that are accepted, so that we can count that all the money that is collected in the form of taxes is going where it should be gone. But during this crisis, no big changes in taxation, with one exception of this corporation tax, has not been done. So taxation, high taxation, is something that we have been living with a long time. To conclude, I would repeat, in other words, the issue that Madam President already mentioned. Austerity policy is very familiar in Finland in these times as well, but we don't speak so much about austerity, but about discipline. We are a country that we believe that the game has to be played according to the rules, as you, as a strong football country, very well understand, I'm sure. It has to be played according to the rules, otherwise you cannot play on the same ground.
Yes, I just for the concrete questions, I took some of my notes. The taxation, Mrs. Lehtomäki answered or said it already a part, but then it's also very hard to not to pay taxes. It's very hard not to pay. Then you're a criminal if you don't pay, and then you're. Also we have done it more easy to also fulfill your yearly income taxation papers, so you can do it in the internet. And actually there's so much automation that employers right away give the information of the salary paid, so then you only receive a paper that is everything right in the paper. And then as a shopkeeper, restaurant keeper, there are checkings, and then you lose your license to keep the shop if you are doing the taxation errors, and then even jail for the persons who escaped the taxes or so. So it is trick, and it is not easy to avoid taxes, and then it is also a shared value that yes, a little bit higher taxes can be also competitive as we use the taxes for the education and the common health and so. And then also for the second question, the SMEs financing, they are complaining at the moment that it's getting harder and harder to get money to invest, to create jobs, because the banking sector is also facing with the new criteria of more core tier one money and more Basel III restrictions and the bear the risks. But then also government is investing on the R&D. The last crisis in the early 90s with the banking sector, we paid the banks and cut the social welfare, child money, pensions and so much. But then we decided to invest on the R&D, and the figure was more than 3. We tried to aim to 4% of the GDP to R&D. And at that time, we created a national system of technological funds, and since then we have improved their cooperation with the universities. So each time the university applies for money, it can be via the TEKES, the Center of the Technological Studies, and supported by the state money. So then the research and universities, we try to target to the concrete measures to someone then sell and produce to export and more intellectual property for Finland and concentrate on that. And then at the moment, the government is trying to privatize something. They are Social Democrats, Left Wing Alliance, try to privatize something also to cover and to find new money to invest on the new sectors. And we have now specialized that ICT could still be the one, and then something on the bioenergy. But there's lack of money in Finland too. So then they try that if something could be prioritized and find money for the new sectors. So this is the political thinking. It's not easy, you don't always find maybe the right ones, but something like that is what we try to do. And for the Europe, we hope for the digital agenda to go forward. I don't know if you have played Angry Birds or something like that. And then they really said going to America was so easy, but in Finland, in Europe, you need to 27 different legislation onto internet-based services because the digital markets are not there. So that's why it's often Finland speaks about the digital markets. And for Lady Andreas spoke about the trading union with the U.S. Finns are, in general, optimistic, as I know this maybe in Portugal too, that free markets and an export could be found outside of Europe, as we are still only trading with each other 80% of our trade. So I'm happy that your experience of the rest of the world, the Latin America, Africa, could be also fruitful for the tables in the European Union to encourage ourselves to trust that we are so good. We can invest on the heads, and then we can take use of the bigger market in the world. Okay. How many minutes we have left?
Well, we can go. We should really. The date foreseen was until 4 o'clock, but we can go until 4:10.
Okay, no, but four, at least we have 10 okay. minutes. So let's see then. Okay. Yes. Yes. No, can I give the floor to our Green member Satu Haapanen from the Green Party?
Thank you, Mrs. Chairman, and it's a big pleasure for me also to be here and meet you. Just to add something to what was said before, that yes, it is true that Finnish people are very willing and happy to pay taxes because we get something for our tax, the free education, quite good health care, almost free health care. And so there must be something also why it is worth paying your taxes. And also the domestic economies are included in what comes to employment. So there, these days it is very rare to employ someone to come and clean your house or to make reparations or domestic works without paying with a receipt. So if someone comes to work for you, you must demand for a receipt. And that has become a common habit in Finland. So the domestic economies are included in this fight against the grey economy. And this government has invested a lot in diminishing a grey economy in the society. So we've taken several measures to tackle this problem in order to have the money for everyone's benefit and use. And so the effective taxation system, no payments without receipts anymore, no liquid money anymore going in the when paying salaries to people. So I wanted to add these details.
Yeah, very good, because it's very new law. It's not still in power that you cannot pay without receiving a receipt. And it's also for the shopkeeper, it's a must to give, and it will be a printed and documented receipt. So that's for the small scale, but when they have many, many, many places, it amounts in the sum. And actually, there are 300 more people working on the grey economy and the taxation on the companies when they try to avoid taxes. So these are very good. Actually, I was also, when I was asking about the timetable, ours is finishing. So I give the very last from our side to Mrs. Rita Müller, a Social Democrat. A Finnish Social Democrat, meaning the
your colleague in Portugal. Yes, thank you very much for your comments and questions. I think that the question has been already answered, but I just want to underline that we are now in the middle of the financial crisis, but we should also, as a Europeans, look beyond the financial crisis and also concentrate to think how we can be more powerful and also how we can create growth and better job in Europe. And I think that this can also be part to solve the financial crisis. And this, I think that this is our common task, what we should do together. And I think that there we find something really which unite us as well.
I think the value base is there. I haven't seen on my trips to any other corner in the world that it's better in Africa, it's better in Asia, in China, or even America. It's best in Europe, and I think there we are on the same planet and same
stuff. Well, I agree with you in this point. I'd like to thank you for this interesting conversation. I'd just like to address two points that came up in your interventions, two very short points. As it was clear, there are divergences in Portugal on the interpretation, as I told, of the results of the program. But I would like to address two points. First, one main concern of the government and of ours, I speak in the name of my party also, it's the financial fragmentation within the European Monetary Union concerning financial conditions for companies. We think that the banking union can contribute a lot to overcome this situation. I understand your
problems with the legacy, but I have very much appreciated your support for instituting a banking union in the future. That's a first point. Secondly, a second point that came up in several of your interventions is the idea that we have to play according to the rules. You even mentioned football on this. Once we have the rules, we should take them seriously. I think it's also our commitment. However, there's one point that is very important in economy. You have to distinguish political commitment and political will from the capability in the concrete political circumstances, from the possibility of fulfilling targets. In this sense, we think it's the position of the government, I think it's also the majority position, that we think we need time for fulfilling these targets. We cannot have impossible targets that even if we have the strongest commitment, we cannot fulfill. That's also a very important message we would like to leave you. Thank you very much for this conversation.